I actually think, you know, we said last week it would be Saturday. For a minute there, I didn't know we were going to make it. Fishing Frank here in the area of Fishing Report. And we got Robert and Josh, the fish coach, here to help me out, figure out where everything is and who's biting and what's going on. Fishing Frank and Chair, Robert and Chair across from me, and Josh Olive in the guest spot.
I'm able to confirm that it is Saturday.
It is Saturday.
Yeah,
yes.
Definitely Saturday.
But we said we were going to do it on Saturday because we were going to be gone for ICAST. Don't remember a lot. Really, I think the only one who had interesting lures was Rapala.
Yeah, they stand out the most in my mind.
The Rapala stop and that other one with the weedless worm hooks in them were the only ones I saw that had anything unique or cool about them.
Right.
I saw a lot of overpriced junk, and there are a lot of brands.
Saw a lot of different stuff that was just reinventing the wheel. You know,
it
that
wasn't even reinventing the wheel. It was repackaging the wheel.
No.
The wheel.
No. What? The bat.
Oh, the bats. That's the head and crazy crawler.
Right. It's just four times the size of it, but it's the same concept.
Yeah, it was just the crazy crawler. But I've actually seen, they had that out with the bird and with the whatever and the whatever, but that wasn't.
Maybe next year they could do a mole.
Yeah. I can honestly tell you, for Savage, who's come out with some amazing stuff, the duck and the bat are kind of letdowns.
Yeah.
The bat wasn't, you know, I mean, gimmicky.
Well, look, you try coming up with new stuff every year. I mean, come on, you come out with some great stuff, and then every year you got to top it again. How are you going to possibly do that, you know?
And I'm not arguing that. I'm not saying that they didn't. I'm just saying they've come up. Let's face it, that trout is staggering. Now, what I would have worked on if I was them was one half the size of their smallest now.
I agree.
That.
I completely agree.
If they would have perfected one half the size of the one they have now, I'm telling you, that would have been a major hit. But they played with a bat. Now, the arms come out the side, so as it grabs, it kind of splash walks. It's exactly the head and crazy crawler. Just a bigger scale with a lot more fuzzy stuff on it.
And plastic instead of metal.
Plastic instead of metal arms.
So yeah, the thing that worried me about that was it looks like it may break. And I didn't go to ICAST with you guys, so I didn't see it in person, but it just looks like it would be fragile.
I didn't even, I looked at it and went, yeah, okay.
Now, other than that, the idea of
it didn't draw me over to the tank.
The idea of a bat lure here in the Charlotte Harbor area is actually pretty cool, because we have so many bat colonies that live underneath bridges. Bats fall in the water, and fish eat bats. I mean, it does happen, so.
And I think it would be a good snook slash tarpon try. I think much more so than the bass.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to eat it because it's a bat, though. I think they're going to eat it because it's something on the top making commotion.
Right. It wouldn't have mattered what it was. It was small enough to swallow. They're going to come up and get it. But I would try it on tarpon before I would throw it for bass down here. Robert's giving me a look.
I'd use it on all three and not even skip a beat because I know they're going to eat it.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean,
I like when Robert gives you that look.
I mean, the main thing is
yeah, and we're on radio, so the look really helps.
Yeah.
I picked right upon it. Oh, what's everybody else's problem?
I think the main thing is with all of it is, number one, you know, when we go there, we got to know, is the customer going to purchase it? Do we have enough confidence in it to want to sell it to the customer irregardless? And then the other thing is I'm sorry, but it's got to catch the customer first before it catches a fish. And some of that stuff, no matter how great that lure could possibly be, I mean, we've seen some incredible lures over the years in the dumbest of packaging ever, and we won't carry it because we know it's just going to sit on the wall and not budge, even though we know it's going to catch fish.
Well, I'll go with you on that, but yeah, to me there was a lot of, you know, that's all right, but I didn't get any energy from it. I looked at it, and I was able to completely forget I saw it in a matter of minutes. That was...
So did Rapala have anything cool?
Oh, unbelievable.
Because earlier you talked about the Rapalas, and I was wondering if Rapala had anything. Yes, listen, no, I got yelled at 1 year at ICAST by a member of the Rapala family, and I told them I'll correct people as much as I can. So I didn't need that being yelled at. It hurt my little feelings.
Yeah, but they were actually right. It is their last name.
Right.
You know, so.
So if I have to correct you every now and then, I guess I'm gonna.
That's fine. So. And you are more... I'm more than willing to be corrected on it because it is true. My only problem is I grew up saying, you know, Rapala.
Well, so did I, but
we
I
were
got
all raised
that.
Mispronouncing it.
By a mean lady.
By a mean lady, yes.
A lady, no less, huh?
Yes, a
nice.
Lady. A mean lady with a narrow nose.
She's one of the Rapala family. Okay. I can say it right when I talk about the family. All right. Let's see. All right, I'm kind of there.
How about Live Target? Did you check out the Live Target stuff?
I forgot. I walked by it a dozen times. You know, it was right there. I could have looked at it.
You know, their swimming topwater soft plastic mullet won one of the Best of Show awards. You could have at least stopped and looked.
Yeah, but, you know, I've seen what wins Best of Show there, and it's usually garbage.
Well, hey, the best fishing accessory was the Yeti 5-gallon bucket. So I don't know what you're talking about. Things that are garbage that win the
Yeti printed on it.
Hey,
for $40.
It's only $40. Come on, that's a great deal. It says Yeti.
I get it. So to me, I got no.
Somebody's getting paid off, and I think they're biased.
Yeah, I mean, there's. I don't know, but I got a hunch they're from far out west.
I stopped by the Live Target, and actually chatted with the guy. Which, first, the money guy who owns the company or whatever came up to me and asked me if I needed help. And I said, well, I have a question that you guys can answer for me. Well, wait a minute. Let me grab this guy over here because he's the technical guy. Like, I'm just the money guy. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But he stood and listened, which was pretty cool. And I expressed my concern about that large, the Manhaden thread herring, you know, the big one that we're throwing for tarpon.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone's having the same problem. Having no problems getting fish eating them. They're having a hard time getting the fish to stay stuck.
Gotcha.
So when I told them that, and I'm like, even on the little swim baits on some of the juvenile tarpon, they're having a hard time keeping them stuck. And the guy was super interested, super attentive. You know, and Carl was there, and I asked Carl if he was having the same problems on the small ones with the juvenile tarpon, and he said he's running in the same situation. So the guy said he actually wants to go and actually try it and play with it. He's thinking maybe the point to the barb area might just be too small is the only thing that he kind of came up with. Because I told him guys have been cutting the little fin off there that's the supposed weed guard, everything else. I said, man, it hooks the living daylights out of fish. Just I'm having the same consistent report back and forth from people that it just doesn't stay stuck in the fish. So... he was very interested in that, and he said he would actually send you an email if he figured out anything.
Well,
which was really cool to have the guy actually paying attention. And it wasn't one of the little lackeys. This was a guy who actually helps develop them.
Well, that's actually cool because I think one of the reasons I don't go there is because I've gotten little or no...
Well, last year we got just blown right off.
Yeah, you did just blow me off, and I don't really care if I carry their stuff or not. If it's hot, we sell it, but it's not something I push because it's usually more money than it's worth.
Right.
I will say their soft baits are actually... fish are hitting them enough where you can actually justify the expense. Most of their hard baits, I can't justify the expense. I get why they're so expensive because... they had to get new buildings, new vehicles, new distribution centers. That it's so expensive nowadays compared to an established company.
Right.
It's like when Pure Fishing bought Sebile. The price went down $5 to $8 a lure. It was absolutely crazy, the lower price. And so when you're dealing with a brand new company and they've got to put all this money into it, it costs 3 times more to do it.
Right, absolutely.
So,
you know, and that makes perfect sense. When you came up with that a couple of years ago, it made 100% sense because it was so staggering. The only thing that's bothersome is one company in particular, which we don't have to say, is the one that kept raising their prices because they changed the packaging.
You mean Yozuri?
Yeah.
Well, Yozuri actually raised their prices not because of the packaging, Yozuri raised their prices because the CEO of the company mismanaged the company's money. He was involved in the crash and all the rest of that stuff.
Oh, I
he
didn't know all that.
He lost his butt. And from him mismanaging the money, the company almost went out of business. They raised the price to keep the extra money so he could get his money back. That's what made me mad about Yozuri.
Gotcha.
You know, now, that might not all be true, but as far as all the scuttlebutt and going behind the scenes and talking with different people, basically, it was company mismanagement, and he just said, screw everybody, you want the lure, you're going to pay for it.
And nice.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, so I said,
I spent all the money on hookers and blow, sorry.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of, you know, I don't really know what investments he had, but it could have been that. It could have been real estate. It could have been stock market, whatever he did. But I guess we'll get on to the fishing report. There's a new weedless Storm has new baits coming out, pre-rigged with a weedless worm hook, weighted hook, great baits. I've actually used them, liked them a lot. I think they're great. Big paddle tail on them. The jerk baits are okay. I don't know if it's actually a jerk bait I really want to throw, but the paddle tails, they were awesome. Wasn't thrilled with the jerk baits. I thought they were good, but I don't know if I think they're great. The Rapala Stop Lure is my new favorite. I'm absolutely enthralled, enthused. I'm on board with that.
Your new favorite bait, your new favorite piece of fishing tech, or your new favorite anything?
It's my new favorite fishing lure. Yeah, I used it enough to go, wow. So
if you were Oprah, this would be going on your favorite things list.
Yeah, but I'm skinny, old, and white. So I don't have any qualifications for being Oprah. And I'm highly uncool. And from everything I hear, I don't really know that much about her. She's very cool. And I'm kind of the opposite of all that.
Okay. So anti-Oprah, and you can still make a favorite things list. Go ahead.
I wouldn't say I'm anti. I'd say I'm opposite.
Well, that's the same thing. And you're an anti-Oprah. You're not anti-Oprah. You're an anti-Oprah.
I'm way different than she's like cool and hip and, you know, and I'm just not. So anyway, PC Solutions of Arcadia, very nice people. They will help you with your computer problems, and you don't have to pack it all up, take it to them and come to you, or they can even log in remotely. There's a whole bunch of options they can do, and they're nice people. I like them. So that's who's sponsoring the Peace River system.
And do they speak English?
Yes.
Natively cool. English? It's
natively English.
It's nobody saying, yes, this is Peter. I will help you with your computer, sir.
No, not quite.
Okay.
You know, he's a pretty cool guy. All right. Harbor Heights Park, Sansucci Trestle, Liverpool, Chester Roberts, Betty Pier, Durst, or 760 Boat Ramp. I went by the 760 Boat Ramp on our way back from ICAST. Just check it out. Still looks nice out there. River's very high.
Very high.
River's real nice and high. It looks like... I gotta get out there. I want to fish that area. Have you been up there yet, Josh?
I have not in a while, but I've heard that there have been some tilapia.
Previously before.
Yes.
Okay.
I've heard there were some tilapia and Mayan cichlids.
Up there. That's his old backyard.
Yeah, pretty much. Some tilapia and Mayan cichlids coming out of there.
Okay, I actually knew that you grew up there. There was a stupid state, but you it's grew all right. up fishing that river.
Not so. A problem. It's okay.
You can ask him about the Eagle River sometime.
The Eagle River?
Wasn't that it?
Eagle River, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That's a town.
Oh.
Well, is there not a river? They named it Eagle River after something, right?
Yeah, it's probably. But
there's got to be an eagle and a river someplace.
Chain of lakes there, and maybe part of that's called Eagle River or something. I was young.
I was reaching. Come on. I was trying to go.
I was playing guitar. You know, there was a Wisconsin River I fished on a lot, and I fished Wisconsin River and a bunch of other ones. I don't remember the names of anymore.
All right. Well, way to screw that up, Robert.
Sorry, I was That's reaching.
All right. Yeah, but it was a good reach. It just didn't quite make it. All right. Anyway, almost there.
Carrot.
All right. What is going on in the Peace River? Anything up there? I've been going.
Honestly, it's been pretty quiet this past week. I have not heard anything worth mentioning because it's been too hopscotched.
Okay. I guess we could always just go on fishandfranks.com. We'll take a second here, go down to weather and tides. And bottom of the page, Peace River button. Let's see what the Peace River's doing. Ah, there we are. Alrighty then. It's down to about 6.5 feet. It had a little bump 2 days ago, went back up to almost 8, but now it's back down to about 6.5. Good water flow. 1968 was the biggie, was 6,700 cubic feet per second, but right now we're at 1,500 cubic feet per second, which is kind of an average.
It's nice. It makes the river fishable. You know, you've got decent water depth. I mean, still, it's dark water. There's all kinds of stuff that floats down the river. You got to be careful.
Well,
but
the average for this month is 1,600, so we're right on average.
Yeah.
Not above, a tiny bit below, but we're pretty much right in there on average. So this is a good year. Nice average water flows.
Which is great.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, close down fishandfranks.com. Get back to this. That's going to take us up to the 41 Bridge.
Well, basically, there's been some black drum there during the early mornings and the late evenings after the storms have gone through. I've heard of a few small catch and release snook. And I've had a couple guys actually this past last weekend that got some redfish over on the pier in between the two bridges. I always forget the name of that, right there behind the tiki bar.
That's the Tiki Bar Pier.
Okay. Well, they were fishing off of that, and they got a couple of redfish off of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it happens.
They were smaller. They were probably 18 to 20 inches, I'm guessing. They brought in the pictures of them the next day to show me.
Had some guys hooking into some Goliath grouper unexpectedly. They thought they were drum fishing, but the baits they were using were pretty big. They were using like half a ladyfish. And the drum weren't taking it. They were hooking into Goliaths. They lost several before they ended up finally hooking one. They said they were getting them right there at the pilings underneath the 41 bridges. I'm not sure which one they were on. But he said that they went past several pilings and hooked and lost several fish before they were able to get one in. And then they got a couple more after that.
That's always promising. That's those fish that are moving out of the river with all that fresh water, I'm sure.
Yep.
So that's not too bad.
He guessed they were about 100 pounds, so I'm guessing they were about 40 pounds.
That's usually how it works.
Have you noticed you can always tell if somebody did not land the fish? If a person comes in and they're telling me about this fish and they know how many inches down to the half inch it was, what the exact weight was, what it looked like, where it lived, who its family members are. The more detail they know about it, and the more in-depth they tell you, the less likely they actually got the fish up to
right.
release it.
Instead, they had to make the story, okay, well, this is the story, you remember it, I remember it, and that way we have all the details down. It's like when you're trying to tell that lie to mom, you try to get as much of the detail as you can to make it believable, and all you're doing is giving away the lie.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a lie. I would say it's more
it's like... It's a lie-ish.
Intense. I know what it was. It was the biggest thing I ever saw. And it was, you know, and it's funny. When they actually land the fish, it's about this big, about like that, you know, but it's pretty big when they actually have the fish in the hand.
Yeah.
But when the fish broke off right at the boat, I mean, it's down to the centimeter. You know exactly where everything was. Okay, anyway, Lashley Pier.
Honestly, it's been crickets there. I have not heard anything that good or bad this week.
I heard a couple of jacks caught there, but not anything worth writing home about.
Yeah, it's been a little funky this week with some of the reports, and I think half of it has to do with these weird storms that have been coming through at random times. So not seeing the consistency.
Well, plus it's hard to fish when all you can get are little tiny shrimps.
I'm going to flick you.
As long as it's not with the cigarette.
Nope.
Don't be an asshole.
Okay. So, anyway, we're going to take us over to Bayshore Pier. And
couple of juvenile bull sharks have been caught off of there. And that's it that I have heard of.
Anything from Mr. Olive?
Some smaller trout out there at the end. And one of the bull sharks that I actually saw a photo of was a lemon shark.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Little guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe, well, not tiny, but, you know, like that 4.5, somewhere around their feet.
Still tiny, really.
I mean, it's a lemon shark. It's little for a lemon shark, but it's not tiny for a shark.
You just don't see very many small ones like that. So honestly, I'd be really happy catching a baby lemon because I've never caught one.
Yeah. I'm guessing a lemon that size is probably 3 years old, maybe. It's not like those little tiny young of the year that you see down there in the Keys.
Right. I mean,
we hardly ever see any of those up here. Those things are so cute.
Okay. One takes over the Port Charlotte Canal System, sponsored by Ray Smith Excavating. And the best ad I can tell you is, if I need dirt work, Ray's going to do it. Been through this with that and the next one. And literally when I was building my house, it was Ray who came to the rescue. He fixed what the contractor was doing and got everything up to where it needed to be. And I mean, yeah, you call Ray. Now Ray's, he's massively busy right now. He's doing a lot of roads, a lot of, he's got contracts, but I forget how many stores, because once people use Ray, then.
Right. You find a legit guy for that, and everybody, that's the guy you go to. It's like finding an auto mechanic. You find a legit guy, and that's it.
Okay. So anyway, enough about Ray. Port Charlotte Canal System, what's going on?
From along the bridges along Edgewater. There's been some small to moderate size catch and release snook. They've been varying, though. I think it has to do with the rain and the water flow over some of the spill dams, because it's like one day they're doing good and the next couple days nothing. Been a lot of juvenile tarpon moving around throughout the entire canal systems, especially like Edgewater Lake and East Spring Lake and their usual haunts. But I'm even hearing of juvenile tarpon up there off of the Manchester Waterway and back there of the lakes back there off of Collingswood.
Anything, Josh?
Black drum showing up in there too, from, you know, literally 10 inches up to 25, 30 pounders. And what have those little tarpon been eating?
The guys have been catching them mostly on the small swim baits and the small shrimp. Imagine that.
Where do you get small shrimp, Robert?
Anywhere you want on the west coast of Florida.
It's funny. I got guys have been coming in here for 25, 30 years or whatever. And they show up and you say, oh, man, you know, typical July stuff. Oh, we got a small one. What do you mean small one? I said, I understand it's been a year since it happened. But, you know, you've actually been doing this your whole life. You know that, you know, June and July, you're probably going to end up with smaller shrimp. It's the hatch from this year, because shrimp don't live inshore. They live out in 60-plus feet of water in the Gulf. You cannot bring bait shrimp up from really 15 feet. You can maybe hit 20, but any more than that, even at 20, they're going to die. They get like the bends. They can't handle that going from down deep to coming up in a net for some reason. We don't know why. It would be so much
simpler. I'm just amazed that they live at all.
Yeah, I mean, drug up in that, thrown on a sorting table, thrown into a live well, mixed in with thousands of other shrimp, taken from that live well, thrown into a truck with completely different water, taken from the truck, thrown into the bait tank. From the bait tanks, and we sort them out, we throw them into the bait buckets, and from the bait buckets out to the water. That is one tough little critter.
Yes,
well,
it is.
And that's why we're using shrimp for bait that you get in the store. That's not why it's not white bait. The white bait would be dead after the first step, and you'd have to do something else.
Well, I can get them to live in my tank. I know how to do it. I've experimented. I can bring white bait in, put them in the tanks, and live just fine. But I put them in your bucket, 50-50, but as soon as you throw them in the water, they're dead again.
Yeah. So what surprises me this time of year is the amount of effort that you guys put in when the shrimp truck gets here in sorting out all the big ones to keep in the back for special customers.
Yeah.
Well, that's what everybody who comes in seems to think when they come in, and all that's there is the little ones.
Yeah,
come on, I've been coming in here for 20 years. Give me the big ones. What big ones?
It's July. Yeah, out of, if we get 1,000 shrimp in, there might be 2-3 dozen, maybe 4 dozen of the bigger shrimp.
If we're lucky.
The first guy comes in, says, give me 4 dozen of the big ones. They're gone.
Yeah. You got to be the first guy after the truck got here to get those.
And, you know, the third guy comes in, give me the big ones. What do you mean you got no big ones? I know you had big ones. Yeah, I did before the first guy showed up.
Yeah. It just amazes me how people think that that's how the bait shop works, that we're holding on to the good ones to give to the people that we really like.
The only one who gets special treatment is my father.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah, my dad can put his shrimp back if he wants bigger shrimp and he wants to put them back, but dad usually doesn't like fishing with the bigger shrimp. He's got a certain size, so he puts those back for him. And occasionally a captain or two will come in who I owe a favor to that will put some shrimp back for themselves. But other than that, it's nobody does it. Now, I will say Jeff does it about once a month for himself. But other than that, I mean, and that all might add up to six dozen here and there.
Yeah, and one of
right, but even then, they're not the biggest ones.
Well,
you know,
there's no biggest ones there.
And the last,
I will disagree and say they are the biggest there, but they're not like they're big. The other problem with shrimp right now is a phenomenon that we don't know about here, but happens in the big cities, is a lot of restaurants are letting people choose live shrimp the way they choose live lobsters. I want that one, that one, that one, and that one. So the big shrimp, I mean, the really nice jumbos and stuff, most of those are going to the restaurants now because they pay premium prices for large live shrimp.
Hmm.
And the only place you can get those off the bait boats, because commercial shrimping boats, everything's up is dead.
Yeah.
So on the bait boats, a lot of them have contracts with the restaurants or restaurant wholesalers to provide them with really nice, big, live, large shrimp. And they get a lot of money for them, a lot more than we're going to pay.
Right.
A lot more than the customer. I mean, it's pretty much like...
So you could probably get some big ones right now, but they'd be $15 a dozen?
Yeah. So
probably not worth it.
All right. Miaka River area. What's going on there?
Well, Eljo Bean is still closed.
Well, that's while they're right. Still closed.
While they're doing the pilings. So your only option is either off the seawall on the west side or a little boat right around the immediate part of the bridge. And there has been some juvenile tarpon there, some jacks in the early morning, and a handful of catch and release snook. But other than that, I haven't heard of any other little critters or fish, you know, cooperating there. How about you, Josh?
I heard of a couple of cobia caught, but they weren't anything like what you want to catch in a cobia. They were, you know, sub 30 inches. So, but some of those jack reports have been pretty good. A lot of guys running into little ones, but there's been some good ones out there. Some drag burners.
Jacks are so much fun to catch.
Such an underrated fish. You know, I don't understand that. People that want to go, quote unquote, sport fishing, and then look down their nose at a jack. I mean, the fish that is eager to hit your lure, eager to run hard, well, and spins off drag and does a great job.
Eager to hit your lure hard and spins off drag. Talking to that, Barry.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, Barry, speaking of underrated.
Yeah, okay, you can talk into that. Hang on, let me get that for Barry.
So if my voice...
You ain't got no voice?
Yeah.
He'll do fine. Yeah, I just don't understand.
Star rods.
How about now, Barry?
Hey, everybody.
How do you sound now? I don't think that microphone's on. I still can't hear him.
Low. I just got back from ICAST. There was 1,900 booths.
Hang on.
19,000 booths. That's a lot of booths, man.
1,900.
I heard what you said.
Quit confusing the old man.
Online or off, he's got a...
This is interesting.
There, it's on.
It's on.
All
right. Lean in closer, Barry.
Yep. Just got home from ICAST. The show went well. 1,900 booths. You could no way cover it in one day.
I don't know. It was hard to get through. Last year, Robert and I did the whole thing in a day.
This year was at least it had it. And next year, this year there were 1,900 exhibitors.
Yeah.
Next year there will be 2,300 exhibitors, and they're moving it to a bigger hall in the convention center, which has very big halls to begin with.
Wow! But they're still doing it in Orlando.
In Orlando, it will be in Orlando till 2021.
Did they put 2,300 people for next year?
400 more than this year.
It was big this year.
That's 25% bigger.
Robert and I.
That's crazy.
One thing we will never do again is take appointments. That was the biggest waste of time. It took a whole day to do appointments. And the problem is most of these guys I'm going to see anyway.
Yeah.
We get private shows from these guys. Oh, come on, make an appointment with me.
No, Frank.
Really? I'm never doing that again.
Frank was one of the few guys that did it right, because he came home.
Yeah.
He came over and said hello to all of us and to Dick Henry, who used to be the owner. And I never even saw Robert, because I live 5 minutes from here, and they see the new stuff before anybody sees the new stuff. So why waste the time when you can see things? They had people from Russia, Indonesia. I mean, it was actually...
Those people take priority. Those are the people that should be getting the appointments.
The people you'll never see again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met people from Mexico, a guy, a wholesaler out of Mexico, really nice fellow. Met a couple, three or four people out of Europe, different countries. One was from the Ukraine, I think. Another one was from one of the former Czech ones, but I don't remember which Wallachia it was. But really nice folks. I mean, boy, they're sure smacking down in the Chinese booths. Fewer and fewer every year.
Yeah. And we're finding out, well, I traveled more, but these Western European and even these Muslim countries in general like us.
Oh, yeah. Now, the Muslim countries, I've always said, before the first Iraq war, when I was working in Europe, I knew guys who had a bait shop just outside Baghdad. Yeah. To this day, I wonder what happened to them. I've never heard from them again. Nicest people you ever met in your life. Great guys. They were actually in Austria selling rugs, Persian type rugs, the first time I met them. And we're talking, and about rugs, and I'm asking, what's the big deal about this rug? Why is it thousands of dollars? And they're explaining the history and all that. And then he said, well, this, I only helped my brother because his brother owned the booth. He said, I got a Baghdad bait shop just outside Baghdad. You know, that's the worst thing about the news right now.
Oh.
When you go to the trade shows, you meet people from Muslim countries, Russia, all these countries.
Nicest people in the world. It's never the people, it's the government itself. It's the same thing to China. I've been to China, Korea.
The people are wonderful. It's the government. Our government, our media, and part of our government.
And the others, too. They're just as guilty as we are.
But it's just unbelievable that we, don't get along, because everybody in the world, you know what they want to do? They want to go to work. They want to come home. They want to fish a little bit.
Have children. Enjoy themselves. Now, I found out that now in China itself, bass fishing and offshore fishing is actually becoming a business. They used to make fishing rods at first, and I was there years ago. They could have been making a fishing pole or a telephone pole. They had no clue what they were making. Now, fishing is becoming an actual sport over there, and there's companies that sell to China.
Right, because they've actually discovered that. Oh, that's what this is for. I can go fishing.
And Korea, too.
Yeah.
Well, Korea's been for a while. But it was interesting to see.
You know what's funny to me is how little of the market share Russia has. It's a massive country. Lots of lakes, lots of rivers and everything. And they're just now starting to get a real fishing business.
Right.
Just barely into it now.
Right.
We're not big on fishing in Russia. We prefer hunting. Making things into fur coats. That is more our speed.
They have, I guess... Well,
it should never be allowed to have artificial materials on coats. It should all be made out of animal skins and stuff. Quit filling our landfills full of garbage. Have animal furs so that it's all biodegradable. That's how you go green. And there's no animal on the endangered species list. Like, you don't see an endangered cow. Conservation through commercialism. I mean, use the coats, eat the meat, bring these, let
the wild ones be, take one or two.
Right. So
sport fishermen, since the day of the pharaohs, a sport fisherman fishing a boat with two or three hooks, four hooks, what are they going to do to the population of fish in the ocean? Now, a 10-mile
long
line. We had in Florida years ago an issue with swordfish, and if it wasn't for an editor of a Carl Wickstrom, who used to be the editor of the Florida Sportsman magazine. He himself took on the commercial, and in every issue, you would see, he would show you pictures that were taken of them catching swordfish and throwing 300-pound marlin, sailfish, dead, right in the water.
Yep.
Just like that. Bycatch. So a trophy of a lifetime.
I will say recreational fishermen have come a long way.
Yes.
We've come a long way.
We will take less, we expect less, and it doesn't really... We never went, I mean, you never really get your money back. If you're going to sport fish to make money, you're catching some red snap, red grouper, you know how much a pound they're costing you with $150 worth of gas?
Don't ever do that math.
Yeah, I don't even try. I never do that. Because it just doesn't, you have to want to fish. It's just a byproduct, a fringe benefit, which is...
All right, so anyway, let's drop back into ICAST. Okay. Was a successful show for you?
Very.
Sold a lot of rods.
Well, we did sell a lot of rods for an ICAST show. ICAST show is more to show new products and to see new customers. We do the big business.
It cost me $50,000 to go there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Barry, but I walked out of there going, somebody would say, well, you know, you don't come to ICAST to buy stuff. I'm going, yeah, well, it cost me $50,000 to go
right,
there.
Right, but what I'm saying is that you wouldn't buy anything from us, because in 2 months you're going to come to a trade show and have actual programs and dating and this and that. We don't give
Barry,
any of that.
It always cost me $20,000.
Well,
to
you
show.
You because you are impulsive. He showed. I saw that.
you noticed that, did you?
He showed me. I got all these rods. All right, Barry. How many of them am I buying? All right, here's your bill, Frank. It's $10,000. Here's your bill. It's $20,000.
He just buys, but then he's all excited. He comes over to the booth, all excited, and says, "You got to see this." And there's this little plastic lure assembling a mermaid or something similar.
It was
he says, "I'm going to sell a thousand of
it." Definitely had it was a feminine lure.
I
don't know how I describe it.
It was one of the most busiest booths in the show too.
It was a bunch of women in a booth selling a lure that had female qualities.
And it would work. I'll bet it works.
I'll bet it works. You know, the bad part about it is here, you know, we get this lure, and it's anatomically mostly female. Let's say two-thirds, missing one-third.
Uh-huh.
But the problem was, I said, oh, this is funny. This is hilarious. I think this is a great little lure. And the women were a ball. We were just, they were cutting up and giving me a hard time. Had such a good time. I said, I want to buy some. You know, you got a wholesale or a dealer price list or anything? No. Can we get some? Well, yeah, we're gonna be doing this. They spent all that money to go to ICAST. They had no price sheets. They had no way to buy the lure.
It's just
they
a joke.
Nothing.
I think they wanted to have fun. They were having a bit more fun than the customers. They were laughing.
Yeah. Oh, man. Picking on me. I walk up to the booth, and they're like, here comes another guy. And it was just like, boom. They were amazing people. I had a great time with them. Laughed my head off. And I couldn't buy anything. I mean, I'm willing to throw money into this because I said anybody with this kind of sense of humor to bring out a lure that looks like this, they're in the back of my truck. I forgot to bring them in. Uh-huh.
He showed them to us. He came over all excited. He says, I got the best thing. So I'm expecting to see some kind of super sophisticated this and that. And he picks out a package with this orange lure that looked like a mermaid, but it had legs because I saw it.
Right. Yeah. A mermaid who forgot her shells someplace.
Yes, yes, it was a mermaid who forgot her shells.
I have no doubt they'll work. It's a plastic.
Well, I'm sure they'll work, but you know, if you want to go with anatomically based lures that work, the male anatomy lends itself very well to trolling lures and topwater plugs.
I had bobbers with that. And Robert, do you remember the name of the bobber? But it was the one bobber that got as excited as you when you got a hit, because
I can't remember the name of it.
Yes. Pops right up there, huh? Yeah, that's
right,
great.
Yeah. Yes, it was hilarious.
Well, you know, if you want to do this for ICAST next year, I'm sure we can find some molds if you want to come out with your own line of trolling lures or something.
Oh no, it was
come on.
It was actually we come used on. To have all those. They're already in existence.
I'm sure they are.
Oh, yes.
Did you see any at ICAST?
Not anymore.
I'm just saying.
People are way too politically correct, and they have no sense of humor.
We dress up like Kiss.
Yuck.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You get to be Gene Simmons.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Did you guys see the Pelagic booth? The Pelagic, the clothing?
No.
The girls?
No.
Well, little to be imagined.
Okay. Did you see the booth that looked like a sushi bar?
Yeah.
That was the best booth that I guess. I actually took a video. I'm showing it to Josh. They had this booth where everything was kind of on a conveyor belt, and you could see pieces of sushi there, plastic fake stuff, with lures in between all coming around in plates, and the guys were all dressed up like sous chefs, and nobody bothered to talk to you. They looked at their phones, they looked at each other. I'm walking up and thinking, oh man, this is the coolest booth I've ever seen. And I stood there. I took a video, and I stood there, and no one would talk to me. I said, well, that saved me a couple of grand.
Money know? Not spent.
Yep.
Money to buy star rods with.
Yep.
We'll talk to you.
Immediately, it gave me such a hard time. It's my favorite booth to go to.
Well, he had to say hello to Dick Henry, who was
the legend.
Yeah, if Mr. Henry's there, you got to say hi to him. If it's just Barry, I walk up, give him a little pat on the rump, and move on.
He called me Susie, his wife. Who's also very knowledgeable, called me 2.5 months ago and said, Uncle, I call him Uncle because China, that's an honor. He's not Chinese, she is. Uncle wants to know if you're going to ICAST, otherwise he's not going. Because another good friend of his, Jerry Rodstein, who owns Master Tackle, an inexpensive line, but very old, he stopped going, so...
I didn't see Jerry at the
he
show.
He was not. So he
is
went.
Okay.
No, he's not okay. But he's okay.
Now these are legends, and I mean.
Yeah, I mean these people.
People talk about the guys on TV. They're nothing, because Jerry, the guy from Master. I mean, he supplied Penn with rods for years. He actually owned part of Penn at one point.
Him and Dick were he and Dick Henry were partners, and they owned Penn.
And Dick Henry started out with a little truck, selling tackle out of the back of the truck, and turned it into the largest independent distribution center in the U.S. and owns, I can't even remember how many different companies he owned, 25, 50, 75% of.
He owned a lot of companies, unfortunately, and he loved it. He would still be doing it, unfortunately.
What was ICAST called before it was ICAST?
ASA.
Yeah.
And then before that, it was something, too.
Yeah, I can't remember, but... Do you remember the ICAST in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Okay. And when I went to the one in New
Best
Orleans...
Best food going.
Yeah. I was at a meeting there, and I had Maurice, Dick Henry, and the Rapala family, and we were all standing around there.
You mean the Rapala family?
The Rapala family, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I would call them Rapalas all my life.
We discussed this already.
Yeah. But I'm out... back having a smoke, and the guy I'm working for is giving me a real hard time. What are you doing out there? Well, it turns out I'm standing there with Maurice, and at that point in history, Dick Henry owned this third of the show. Maurice owned that third of the show. The Rapala family owned this part of the show, and there was like one other guy who owned that last, 15%.
Crumbs.
Yeah. There was like 5% were like, smaller dealers. But those guys owned either a piece or all of the company for almost everything at the show. They were the most influential people on the planet at that time. And here I am standing here talking to all of them. It was one of the most exciting days I ever had.
And I got to tell you, this is a truly fascinating dive into the history of the tackle business. But I feel bad for the people who wanted a fishing report.
I know. We're getting there.
Well,
they can zip past it.
They can't get that from me because I watch their guides taking my boat and bringing in coolers full of fish because I've had some health issues. So the last time they did it, I said, listen, guys, I love you taking out my boat because it's running great and you take wonderful care of it. But please, no longer show me the coolers after you come in.
Peg Leg takes his boat out a lot.
Yes, I know. I keep getting invitations to go on his boat.
Yeah, you open it. Frank, even your dad, I told him, because he said you've been catching any grunts. Well, I don't know if people know a grunt is basically a panfish that's smaller than a panfish on the east coast of Florida, where I lived for 35 years. And then I moved here and wish I would have done it 35 years ago. But where we are, you catch a grunt and it's not worth, they're tasty, but it's not worth skinning. And
but on this side, they're nice size. They're big.
Yeah.
Two, three pound grunts. The guy, Steven, pulled up a fish and I said, what's that? That's a grunt.
Now, show me a place where you can catch 2 and 3 pound squirrel fish and I'll move there.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Tell me where a place, many places, this is not the only one, one of the few, where you can catch 18 and 20 inch lane snappers.
Mm-hmm.
A lane snapper is probably one of the best eating, if not the best eating of the snappers.
My question is, are they leaving you some of those fillets that they're showing up with?
They're offering me every time, and I don't, so I'm just an old lazy single guy. But if my daughter's around,
they don't offer to cook them for you.
They probably would.
Well,
that seems fair to me.
We're gonna wrap this up and call it part one of the fishing report. Then we're gonna come back and do a part two because I've done this. I've been sitting back here long enough where I actually have to take a break now. So, anything last you want to point out?
Nice talking to everyone and. The fishing industry is healthy, and
no, wait a minute. You just said that ICAST was for new stuff. Did Star bring anything new this year?
Yes.
Well, tell about that.
Well, we had our new VPR series, which, not to go into much detail, is about the lightest rod that you could buy in the world with the most power, and
so state of the art.
You can have them next week, what's left.
Okay.
We brought the first...
Yeah. Best buddies, but...
I think
if there's anything left, I'll ship you some.
Well, David Suggs, who's Frank's rep and one of the best, if not the best in the business, he has sample sets. If he had to, he'd get Frank a sample set. But they're not for everybody. They're expensive. But if you want the best that there is... with the most expensive state-of-the-art components, actions. These guys seen a few of them through the testing process. I had them here, and some of these boys tested some of them for you.
And the ones we saw were not just very lightweight, but also extremely durable, very strong.
They're powerful. There's a story of Bill Lohman. You know Bill Lohman?
No.
He's a dealer. He was bringing up a grouper, and a Goliath grouper ate the grouper, and he brought up the Goliath grouper with a 30-pound VPR rod, and he's got the pictures. Well, the grouper ate the Goliath grouper, and the Goliath grouper probably 60, 70 pounds.
Now, I would say the biggest difference in your company, because you're making a lot of your stuff overseas because of... back when you made the switch, everything was getting bad here in the U.S., the taxes, everything, the insurance and all that. So you had to make the switch. But you've extended your warranties. You've got the best warranties in the business, the components. But you actually have your own employees on site there supervising how everything's done.
We have our own employees trained by us. I've been to China. Others go to China all the time. I've been to China. We actually, part of any agreements we make is our people go into the factories and they check our products. Now, they cannot check every rod. When I made them here, I never checked every rod. It's impossible. But for the most part, we have our quality level, if not the best, I don't know how anybody's could be best from there because some of the biggest manufacturers, which is really odd, do not have any testing or supervision in the factories.
And where that's scary is when I tried to have rods made over there, I said, I want this, this, and this, and we marked it all off, had the papers and everything. And then I get them, and the components are garbage.
Right.
They look like what I ordered, but they're not
the
same material.
There's a lot of that, but we have people in the factories, and all the star rods you see are designed and tested in the USA as they always have been.
Yeah.
The parts are the best that you can get in the world. The only difference is the hands.
Well, I will say, and it may not be popular with a lot of our listeners, but I believe everybody in the world deserves a job, a living wage. And the one thing I always want to know is, if somebody goes overseas, what are we getting in return for it? And with you, we get a better price, we get better warranties, everything worked out. Now, there's companies in this business that I've thrown out of the store because they went overseas, raised the price, lowered the quality, and I'm like, get the heck out of here. Literally throw them out the door, verbally if not physically, but with Star,
we only went there so that we could keep the quality of the components the same.
And the cost.
And the cost where people could afford it.
And that's what Star's done. I mean, because the Stellar
otherwise
Light is...
That's the best bar. It's probably... I mean, that this store sells... Well...
We sell more Star rods than anybody in the nation. Let's put it bluntly.
As far as Stellar rods, they're way ahead. And a Stellar rod, we haven't changed it much, but there's not much you can change to it. And it's value-wise, I don't know of any better value.
I don't know of a better value in the world.
I mean,
for a
rod that has quality to it, and the price is not.
And that's why, you know, everybody deserves a job. And so here you got some guy buddy over there making it, putting it together. You got the guy making the components. They're shipped over here. You've got salespeople, you've got design engineers, testing engineers. A lot of people working in the U.S., a lot of people working overseas, people shipping it. There's a lot of jobs created with that. But anyway, we got to get...
Worldwide.
Going. And this is Fish and Frank. That was Barry, the owner of Star Rods.
Yeah.
And we're going to be back with part two of the Area Fishing Report in just a little bit. Thank you, guys. We're going to take a break, and we will be back.